Dear Venerable, brothers and sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, today also we are going to start the Dhamma talks. So, may you all settle down and give the consent with three times, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ යාචේව කෝපන අජ්ජත්තිකා පඨවි ධාතු යාච බාහිරා පඨවි ධාතු පඨවි ධාතු රේවේසා තං නී තං මම නීසෝ හමස්මින් නමේසෝ අත්තාති ඊව මේතං යතා භූතං සම්මප්පඤ්ඤාය දක්ඛබ්බං තීති වෙනබල් සිස්ටර්ස් ඇන්ඩ් බ්‍රදර්ස් ධම්ම ෆ්‍රෙන්ඩ්ස් ඉත තර්ඩ් ටෝක් ඉන් අවර් සීරීස් ඕල් ද සීරීස් වී හැව් බේස්ඩ් අපෝන් the particular discourse known as Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, that is about the expression on the elements, and whereby the Buddha try to define a person in terms of common characteristics. One aspect of it, or materialistic aspect of it, that each and everyone made out of six elements. And first statement is, Chaddhaturoyam puriso, a person means merely six elements. And then giving further details on this statement as to what are the six elements, the earth element, water element, fire element and air element, and the space as the fifth element, and the consciousness, the sixth. So we have taken time yesterday and day before to understand the background information, how one yogi to look at, how a yogi should understand this teaching of the Buddha. And towards the latter part of the yesterday's talk, I try to compare it with the meditation method and wanted to quote yet another particular sutta discourse known as Ananja Sappaya Sutta, and they are the Buddha explained when and where someone is going to take this, specifically the insight meditation, how is the evolution take place as to this materiality. Normal common being, they are basically concerned about the sensuous pleasure that is being known as kama guna, that means varietal entertainment of the sense faculties. So that is called the most gross form, and it gives back so much of agitation, so much of unsettlement, so much of frustration. So after a while, some people reflect upon that and become somewhat disgusted with, not the whole. And then they think, maybe little fraction, think about renunciation of this sensuous pleasure or sensuous gratification and try to maximize their isolation, the freedom, the peace of mind. So therefore, between these two stages, the renunciation from the sensuous pleasure is a standard method that is called Kaya Viveka. You go to a entering into a forest, sit under a tree, or go to a solitude place. And then, when and where someone is going to make you this solitude and entertain this peace of mind and the freedom, it is not so easy because the shadows or the perception of this sensuous gratification, sensuous pleasure is going to disturb, and that is the place where obsessional kind of defilements, that is to say five hindrances, going to distract him. Each and everyone facing this situation whereby try to calm down the body and the mind in terms of meditation, each and everyone has to go through this obsessional kind of defilement. It obsesses their minds, and individually each and everyone think it is my own mistake or it is my own bad luck. That is why even though I renunciated from this sensuous world, still the mind is not at peace, not at rest. So therefore they struggle some or the other in order to get rid of these sensuous perceptions, kama sanya, and they think as far as they are renunciated from this gross, dear and near ones and the properties and the fame and everything, this kama sanya will be very easy to get rid of, but anyone going to face it, they find it is more subtler, it is more complicated, unless otherwise you have the appropriate strategy, appropriate technology, you can't get it off. Because it is very subtle. Because it is very complicated. So, whereby you have to apply samatha anugrahita, that means you have to facilitate this concentration, one-pointedness. So, that is the point you are going to make use one or the other materiality, we call nimitta, we call object of meditation. So, you take a material part as an object of meditation in order to get rid of this sensuous perception, kama sanya. So it is a struggle. Some people take in-breath and out-breath, yet another person can take rising and falling of the abdomen, or in walking meditation you can take left leg, touch of the left leg and the right leg, and completely on the concentration line, you can take kasina nimitta, patavi nimitta, tejo nimitta, apo nimitta, or you can reflect upon the virtues of the Buddha, or you can reflect upon the loving kindness, whatever may be, in order to get rid of this sensuous perception, the most appropriate method is to make you something tangible, something verifiable. So in insight meditation, all the time you are using a materiality that is called kayanupassana. You take your own body as an object of meditation. More and more you familiarize your own body here and now, so much so you can do away with five hindrances. So this is how you are changing from kama sanya to rupa. So when and where you become successful, instead of five hindrances, you are going to earn five jhanic factors. So these jhanic factors are counterfeit, not the counterfeit, is the antidote for each and every five hindrances. Kama guna is represented here as kama chanda, sensuous desire. It is a mere varietal entertainment. Our mind is very happy to jump from one object to another. It has been example given as a mad monkey. But instead, in meditation, you try to adhere to one materialistic sign, materialistic object, and the mind become very unruly, bewildered, in order to keep the association with single object. So you are replacing sensuous desire, varietal entertainment with one materialistic object. And the hatred arises whenever the mind is going to associate one particular object. So the rapture you have to earn through meditation. When and where meditation rapture going to happen, you can do away with hatred. And when and where the mind is free of hatred and the desire, it is naturally sleepy. It is naturally bored. It is naturally slimy. So therefore, meditators are the best people to sleep sitting or standing also. But when and where the mind has no desire and the hatred, these are the real awakening thing in the mind. When these are suppressed, naturally the sloth and tava sets in, sleepiness come in. So that is the point we are going to apply. Applying thoughts, that is to name or label the particular object you have selected, and that is called naming, labeling, or in Pali it is called vitakka. So when the in-breath happens, you note it as in-breath. When the out-breath happens, you note it as out-breath. That is how you keep the mind awakened, not allowing it to sleep, not allowing the sliminess to set in. So you have to use strategically when and where mind becomes, the body becomes, the breath becomes calm and quiet. You have to understand the danger that is called into this sloth and tava. Where you not label, that is how you keep the mind mobilized. So the sloth and tava will be replaced by the vitakka. And sometimes mind is happy to associate with the past, and often it is end up with a regret, and sometimes future planning end up with excitement. So both of them are again kind of agitation. So in order not to have that kind of thing, you have to get the real happiness of being with one single object. So this is a very advanced kind of a trained mind. So whenever the happiness happens, the mind is not running past and the future. It be little contented with the present moment. And so it is happening very, very slowly. At the beginning, you understand the present moment. And later, you understand the continuation of the same phenomena. That means here and now I am, or mindfulness, or the present moment, or the diligence. And when this happens, the mental factor called doubt, it is without any due cause, due reason, it can entertain doubt. Whether am I progressing or regressing? Whether I am going towards the samatha or whether I am going to the vipassana? Or is all these distractions and the hindrances, is it due to my lack of morality? Or is it due to something mistaken or wrong techniques I am using? So these are the things yogi tend to entertain. And when and where the yogi try to understand the characteristic nature or intrinsic nature, personal characteristics of in-breath versus out-breath, this penetration, this inquiring mind is the weapon to do away with doubts. So instead of the doubts, you learn the value of vichara. Vichara means inquiring mind. That is to say, this is in-breath. It is equally said, this is not out-breath, because in-breath is having these characteristics. And whenever it is changing into the out-breath, verily you know, it is not in-breath. These are the characteristics of out-breath. Like you are not just see the object and come, but instead you touch it, you try to feel it, you try to experience it. Not only that, you try to tell it to someone, These are the characteristic difference between the in-breath versus out-breath. So at the beginning, in order to promote this vichara, in the interviews, you are pushing, you are asked to ponder into, plunge into the object, that means in-breath and out-breath, for example, and what are the characteristic difference. So with little bit of guidance and directions, if the yogi really understand, he or she will come out with the, this is in-breath, this is with the coolness, it is rubbing sensation, I feel in the left nostril, this is the out-breath, is comparatively little warm, it is comparatively short or long, I feel in the same place or other place, like some characteristic they learn to understand, and it is developing the inquiring mind. When you keep on practicing, not only you see the difference between the in-breath and out-breath, you can see the difference between in-breath to in-breath, out-breath to out-breath. Chronologically, whether in-breath is becoming more aggravated, more gross, or it has become calm and quiet. Likewise, comparatively between in-breath and out-breath, as well as in-breath to in-breath, out-breath to out-breath, more and more you develop these jhanic factors, the less and less mind become wandered off, bewildered, and under the influence of the five hindrances. So, this kind of a lucid explanation possible only if you are familiar with this book knowledge. If you are, if you have listened enough, and if you have theoretical knowledge, you can understand this changeover. That many do not have that kind of a detailed theoretical understanding, so therefore they will see the mind is more now associating generally with the primary object rather than wandering off. And he or she can little longer than earlier and can give more explanation, more detail, more sappy, more juicy about the primary object. So therefore, even though you do not have any kind of a theoretical understanding, you can understand that mind is more little magnetized to the object, that materiality that you selected. In this case, we have taken the breath as an example. So when it happens, the Buddha explained your perception, which was associating so far with the sensuous perception, now changing into the more subtle one, vitakka vichara, pichasuk ekaggata, sukuma satcha sanyi. It's very subtle and it is associating more with this applying thoughts, inquiring thoughts, rapture, happiness and one-pointedness. When that happens, the function, the result you get it, you are slowly, slowly doing away with five hindrances. So therefore now you, first you got ridden of sensuous pleasure with the sensuous perception. Now sensuous perception is replaced by this first jhanic kind of subtle perception. And it is happening in a very gradual process, one replaced by yet another subtle perception. So this is the way in the Samatha method, it has been explained. But exactly the same thing can happen in the Vipassana way too. For that, we have to define is Samatha concentration and the Vipassana concentration. That is the question we postponed in the discussion. So let us see what are the differences between this Samatha concentration and the Vipassana concentration. It is not an exhausting kind of list, but there are some points, crucial points. If you know, it is better. Even if it is not there, you can progress. That is a separate story. But when and we are the Samatha concentration or peaceful kind of meditation going on, the object almost is the same, and you are focusing into that, and more you associate the noting mind and the noted object becomes somewhat closer and closer and closer. As far as to become closer, to become immediate, less and less room for the interaction, secondary object to come and interrupt you. So more and more you go there, the object of meditation and the noting mind become closer and closer. So more and more it become closer, the meditator feel they become electrolytes or they become magnetized to the meditation, and ultimately they merge each other, the object of meditation and the noting mind, and plunging into the object. So that is how it is being known as the jhanic experience or appana samadhi. And before coming to that, before coming to the complete merging, they associate a little bit with the distance and in the same frequency, and they are also all, it is not yet merged each other, but working in a such a way, five hindrances are not much thrown away, they are just at the doorstep, but they are not coming into the house, and inside you find this characteristic of easy noting of the object, and easily you can understand this is in-breath and this is out-breath, and you can explain individual characteristic, intrinsic characteristics. And therefore you know now inquiry mind is working by itself. So when these two happens, the rapture and the pleasure going to come, because now mind appear little tamed and you are working within the sphere of the meditation object. Often, no, it is going out, but not frequently like earlier, and therefore more and more chances for you to readjust and be focused, be one-pointed, and you have to still work to keep this state. This is called access concentration. And when that access concentration happen, there's a one advantage, because that is, if I am to say, for appana samadhi or jhanic experience, the object must be equal. But for the access concentration, the object can be changed, but the mindfulness is continuous. So mindfulness is very playing acrobats, very radical. Object is changing, even then, whatever the object arises, it plunge into and get the information as much as possible. It's so quick, so it is called momentary concentration. It is like target, not like target shooting, it is shooting to a jumping animal. Concentration meditation is target shooting, target is fixed. To keep on shooting, one day you can hit the bullseye. But if you are trying to shoot a jumping animal, very difficult to do it in the assured way. So therefore it is very sporty. And so for the vipassana meditation, that kind of a radical way, you have a kind of a tendency to that kind of a radical thing. That is why if you are doing in anapanasati, if you know merely about the breathing, that you know it is not wandering, it is not daydreaming, fantasizing, breathing, but no much of information. So that is enough for samatha meditation, continuously using the breath. But in the vipassana meditation, you know where the breath is touching. And therefore you know when the in-breath touching happens, is it exactly the same point with out-breath or out-breath touch is different. That very knowledge is not disturbing your mindfulness. It is a knowledge. You know, in the in-breath, I feel coldness, rubbing sensation, short, long, left nostril, right nostril, top of the lip, and all the kind of things you can verily understand. And when the out-breath happens, it may be either left nostril or in the same place, instead of the coolness, the warmness can happen. Or rubbing sensation may be different. Even though it is fast changing, you can extract information. and you can make sure mindfulness is not changing. For example, take in the walking meditation, you are focusing the attention on the left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg. The touching point is changing fast from the left to the right without any kind of a similarity in the touching point. Even then, once your mind becomes agile, once your mind becomes mobilized, you can see, you can easily understand the right leg touch, starting from the heel and spreading towards the toes, and sometimes it's going to the inner line of your foot, sometimes the outer line of the foot, and then as the right leg is lifting, the weight is shifting to the left leg, and it is taken with the heel, and slowly shifting to the toes, while it is moving, the right leg again try to take the establishment and the weight. These things are changing, and you can be aware of all the changes, and discreetly understand this is right leg, this is left leg. You can note it, if the mind is wandering, or you can do away with noting, and you can understand very crystal clear, this is happening. So this kind of concentration called momentary concentration, because the object, the place, everything changing, but still the continuum, the continuation of the mindfulness is continuing, mindfulness is intact. So this is hardly a yogi can believe it. They think the object must be fixed and mindfulness also must be undisturbed and continuous. That is the conventionally, yes, true. But there is a kind of a very sporty, very radical kind of a mindfulness. While the objects are changing, still you can keep the balance. So this called, while the object is fixed, it is called samatha meditation, samatha concentration. While the object is changing and still you believe your continuum of the continuation of the mindfulness, that's the momentary concentration. So when these two are happening, sometimes this momentary concentration also becomes well seasoned, gather the momentum, so that so quickly the objects are changing that never you fail to keep the pace with the object, and ultimately as if as far as the mind is noting mind and the changing objects, when they synchronize, you feel like object is static. That is the way magically happened, because the speed of the mind and the changing of the object happened in the same speed, so you feel like it, you can harness it. So you feel like a static object. So that is sometimes nauseatic, sometimes vomitish, to understand how that kind of a thing can happen, because you know objects are so changing fast. But when the mindfulness becomes very versatile, when the mindfulness becomes very mobilized, it can catch the object, whatever it may be, the rising rate. So when that happens, you feel the expansion of your brain activity, capacity, and desire for meditation. So this is the way the Vipassana meditation going to take place. And from walking meditation, when you go to the day-to-day activities, the mindfulness has many, many complicating dimensions. That is to say, intention also come into being, more than in walking meditation. Time-space restrictions are coming. You have to associate some other people, and you have to keep the ethical values. And all these become more and more variable, number of variables. But even then, if you start with the simple tasks where you can perform, you can hardly, you can sometimes successfully assimilate the walking meditation in the day-to-day activities. And later when you keep on practicing it as a challenge, you can see whatever the multitasking, mindfulness is there. And when and where you are going to promote it, entertain it, it which is like a challenge. And theoretically speaking, in the King Moolaka Sutta, the Buddha mentioned, Satadipateya Sabvedana. Whether you like it or not, mindfulness, the surveillance of mindfulness is present in each and every moment of meditation, every moment of every thought moment, whether you are Buddhist or non-Buddhist, whether you are practicing or not. Only thing is you don't believe it. You don't appreciate it. The meditator with all the kind of training, all the kind of sacrification, all the kind of faith, slowly, slowly introducing best condition in sitting, little bit challenges with the walking, and full of challenges in the daily activities to prove whether you know or not, do not know, the mindfulness is there. The moment you understand it, you feel so far you have not given the due respect to the mindfulness, you have given undue respect to the faith, undue respect to the energy and concentration and the wisdom. Each and every time you do unproportionate faith, support and appreciation of the faith, mindfulness becomes backward. Whenever you are going to appreciate the energy, mindfulness becomes backward. Unwanted appreciation of concentration, that's a kind of a negligence of the mindfulness and the wisdom. So, very venerable Jnanaponika, in his book, The Power of Mindfulness, he says, mindfulness is a very shy character. It is not jumping and asking for rights. It is shining qualities inside. So the meditator has to give due respect to the mindfulness and give the chair to the mindfulness. And even if you go and invite, mindfulness will be a little hesitant to say, because the faith is so jumping and arrogant. So, mindfulness is not happy to fight with the character-like faith. It is not happy to fight with the energy. And yogis are very happy and addicted to the concentration. So, mindfulness never asks your favor, it waits. And people say the best of it is wisdom. So, that wisdom is the idiotness. That is what we can say ignorance. That is what we can say book knowledge. That is what we can say worldly knowledge. So much so you appreciate it, mindfulness will come back. But mind you, you can't dismiss mindfulness. Even at your worst defilements, mindfulness is weakness. So it's a correct perspective, even though it is not taken the chair, if you are ready to appreciate the role of mindfulness, whereby even the objects are changing, still the mindfulness can maintain surveillance. Mindfulness can continue its diligence. So more and more you appreciate it, you are not a risk-avoiding kind of a character, you will be a risk-lover. Many uncertain things happen. Let it happen, you spy to see when such a mishap happens, can I maintain still the mindfulness or not? If you do it in a positive way, you find already mindfulness is there witnessing, whether you appreciate it or not. But to come up to that level, you have to go to 1001 trial and error. You may think it is up to the Buddha. You may think it is only up to the Paccheka Buddha. Or it is up to the Arahant. Or to the enlightened being. I am a very sinful and guilty lay person running household life and doing so much of mistakes and having so much of defilement. How can I expect the mindfulness to be continued from the morning to evening? That will become a curse. You are the very person creating a curse, and therefore mindfulness is a very shy character. It is waiting and sitting. When is this idiot going to understand my qualities? That change is changing your personality. It is changing your likings and dislikings. It can so deep, it can manipulate your karmic forces also. Otherwise,
your likings and dislikings, your personality, your karmic forces take the help. And mindfulness become backward. You are desperately waiting. You feel so guilty. You feel so desperate. And remorse. Everything become very big. When the mindfulness taken the chair, when the mindfulness taken the helm, the Buddha says it is so powerful, the mindfulness, even a split second of mindfulness, you can cut off all the past karmic forces. It is called, it can cut moha patala. Moha patala means thousands and millions of years we were in the wrong calculation, we were in the wrong thinking. So therefore, there is accumulation of some rust, some kind of dust, some kind of defilements. And the split second of mindfulness still can cut through for that split second of mind, thought moment. And if you are a risk lover, if you are radical in reflection, and let the situation complicate whatever may be the way, my main task is to be aware. My main task is to be mindful. My main task is to be diligent and vigilant. So that makes your mental attitude completely different, completely revolutionary. So you are never worrying, you are never protesting, you are never asking any rights. But let the phenomena take place completely in the natural way and you observe. So in the religious way, in the scriptural way, we can say you let the breath to happen from very subtle beginning to the middle, passing the middle to the very subtle end of the breath without any influence. And once the in-breath finishes, ceases to exist, you just wait and see what is the next. It is not anxiety. It is not perplexion. You just observe and then there is a gap again, very subtle start of the out-breath. And it is rushing through your nostrils and ceases to exist. The day you see the beginning, the middle and the end of the breath, that indicates that very little task you have selected as your primary object, now under control. And before the start of the in-breath, nothing. And from the nothingness, this rubbing sensation, the coolness, everything starts. And then ultimately go to the perceivable level. And while you are in the beyond the perceivable level, you have the sign, you can tell others, you can communicate with others. And then passing the peak, again it ceases to exist. And one day you will understand, even though you can't perceive, the out-breath is still happening, you can't touch it, you can't feel it, you can't perceive it. So that is happening, so-called, the subconscious. That is to say, you can see only the tip of the iceberg. That is, theoretically you know, tip is representing only 1/10 of the ice volume, and 90% is under the water, and due to this upward movement only the tip is existing above the ground, above the water level. And submarine area is bigger. So, if you carefully observe the level the water and the ice is touching, surface of the water, meniscus, and then onward you can explain the detail about the shape of the pinnacle, size of the pinnacle, everything, but underneath huge ice cube is pushing upward. You don't know, you can't perceive it, because it is changing over point from the submarine to the air. So this is the mystical point that you are training through the mindfulness. You see the beginning of the in-breath. You try to see the beginning of the in-breath. For that, you have to be prepared before the breath happens as it's I am to say, and you focus your attention and wait how this not the place there is no air transaction, the air transaction starts. And you can see there is a phenomena and it after a certain maturity only you can perceive it. Before that perception level, there's a mystic area, but if you are applying again and again and again, day by day you can increase your sensitivity, you can increase your efficiency, you can increase the area under the mindfulness slowly, slowly, and when it is happening, again when it is disappearing, you observe it. And this is, we are talking about the materiality, and one, when you keep on practicing, one day you will develop kind of a disinterest, you will develop kind of a sloth and talk, you will develop kind of a desire, and they also are exactly the same. They have, the desire has its own beginning, its own middle, its own end. And the hatred has its own the beginning, the middle, and the end. As far as the beginning, the middle, and the end is concerned, whether it's matter or whether it's non-material, exactly the same. So you learn this story, each and every phenomena, it has the beginning, the middle, and the end. Untrained mind only see the middle, but the secret is at the very subtle beginning, at the very subtle end. But the Buddha ethically, he says, our mind naturally do not like to see the end, because it is the death. We are very happy to see the birth. So therefore, he knows baby's desire. So ask the baby just to see the beginning, don't worry about the death. So whenever we try to see the in-breath and out-breath, continuously face to face with the second phase in the materiality, Buddha says, okay, if your mind is trained to see each and every in-breath and out-breath without missing, now it is time for you to see the beginning. That means be prepared. Be vigilant, be diligent before the transaction takes place up there. And then whenever you try to see the beginning, it is completely mystic. It is completely religious. It is completely very profound. And very, you can't explain it. It is go beyond the words and the language. So more and more interested, then Buddha says, you can't now do away with the looking at the end. This is how you start with the beginning, middle, and then you train yourself to see the beginning. Whenever you see the middle and the beginning, mind is ready to understand dependent origination. This is the profoundest in the teaching of the Buddha. So it is just the breath. First you familiarize the breath, acquaintance with the breath, season the breath, so that breath will be face to face with, and that means you see the middle. And now the guidance is to see the beginning. And the end, the result you get is, with the same token, one day you will see the end also. Then the beginning, the middle, and the end you can see, and ultimately the same thing you can apply the in-breath application to the out-breath, exactly the same, if I am to take the example of rising and falling of the abdomen, and in the walking, left leg, right leg, and in day-to-day activities, going forward, coming backward, looking sideward, looking forward, bending your arm, stretching your arm, all the kind of thing, they are series of activities, but they are compilation of small activities. Each and every activity has this kind of the story of beginning, the middle, and the end. So when and where you are advanced and about to see the beginning, the middle, and the end, you may find the content of the activity will be disinterested. If you are not looking at the beginning, the middle, and end, the content of the activity makes you happy and motivated and interested and kind of thing. But instead, if you are going to see the beginning, the middle, and the end, activity by itself becomes boring, monotonous, disinterested. So therefore, there you may find under such circumstances, again the mind is full of wandering thoughts. Mind is full of distractions. Because your interest to the primary object, interest to the secondary object, everything disappeared whenever you try to see the mechanism, how it happens. So this is the point where yogi
find it is difficult to continue the timetable, difficult to sit in the proper time, and difficult to keep the track with the primary object, and stop and over can come. All the kind of things happen. So therefore, once you develop the relationship, the materiality, at the beginning, technical meditation, technical details can make you interested. But once that is being seasoned, everything appears the same, everything happens at the beginning, the middle, and the end. And therefore, ultimately, you feel like flattening off of your interest. And yogi never report that kind of thing, because they take it personal. It's nothing personal. It is one very advanced stage. Now your mind is preparing. So there the Buddha says, if you try to quote the Samatha meditation, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. Towards the fourth jhana, the equanimity sets in. When the equanimity comes, powerful, you can become very strong, you feel not motivated like. You don't feel the same enthusiasm to look the phenomena just like at the beginning. This exactly happened in the Vipassana meditation, yogi also. So there the Buddha says, once you familiarize this materiality, again the perception regarding materiality, rupa and rupa sanya, going to take place, going to shift from the rupa to rupa sanya, you end up with the half dream. You don't know whether it is reality or whether it is the concept. And even the breath, you can hardly perceive. Breath is there, otherwise you must be already dead. Definitely you are not dead. You are really living. But you can't perceive it. Even if you try to perceive, you don't know if it's a mind game or it's a reality in the brain. And sometimes jerks happen, in the muscle dance happen. You don't know whether it's really happening or your mind meeting. Sometimes you start to wave like a pendulum. And when you open the eye and see, sometimes you know such a thing. And you feel like you incline to one side, like a piece of a tower. Inside, and you feel like it's hard and fast, and when you open the eye, it's a very slight thing is there, but mind is exaggerating it up to that, it's almost about to fall down. So they are the rupa sanya going to take place instead of rupa, and they are when and where I come up to the in between concept and reality, your mindfulness is the only the whetstone to verify from the beginning how much it's refined at the beginning, sensuous pleasure and sensuous perception. And then materiality, they are concrete. Now materially, the perception regarding materiality, so ultimately when you come to the perception towards the materiality, the boundary between in and out, myself and not self, merge. And when such a thing happens, you develop uncertainty, you develop a kind of a lost feeling, no orientation, and sometimes goes into the boredom, and a kind of a hatred, kind of irritation, kind of fault-finding, self-accusation, things are going to froth, and you don't know. Whether it is something out of meditation or when you get up, still it is lingering off. And when such a thing happens, the Buddha says, now you feel like lost the ground, lost the orientation. So therefore, uncertainty, entertainment of doubts and all the kind of things can happen. But only the possible answer or solid answer is, you know your history. It is the nothing but the perception becomes subtler and subtler and subtler. So it's one, whenever it is happening for the first time, it may be strange experience, but when it's going to happen again and again, you have to season in such a way, bring daily you start with very gross thing. And in the meditation, some people take it 45 minutes, 50 minutes to bring
down to that subtle portion. Some people soon after sit, they directly plunge into this subtlety. And then you have to understand, sometimes it could be called as concept, half dream, or mirage, or camouflage. Sometimes it is reality. So they are, up to that point you have to meditate, and then only you, Buddha says, whatever you see, it is mental images. Is it worth calling this is me? It is worth calling this is mine? It's worth calling this is myself? And sometimes you get either sound of silence or other mystic sounds. And some people feel, I heard from my dead mother and came from the message came from the God and the Brahma. So they are in a madness, but good thing. Good madness, qualitative madness. So they start talking about others' minds and all the kind of things without knowing. When the mind is going to subtle layers, it can create anything. This indicates your likings and dislikes, your upbringing, your culture, your karmic forces and your personality you have accumulated so far. So in the Zen books, it says, at that time, senses do not accumulate any impingements, nor any signs. Eye is closed, no sounds, no tasting, no smelling, and the bodily tactile sensation on the breath also gone. So that the faculties are open, no customers. What they can do is, they can run the show with the library shows. What else? So that means you are projecting outward. That projection really indicates who am I. It is mystical. It is ghostly. It is very subtle. So, if you are not well instructed, you try to anchor your consciousness on these very vague things. And you are trying to make storytelling, fabrications out of this, and you worried about why this blue color comes to me, why the purple color comes to me, why this smell coming to me, why this sound is coming, and you start to make worrying. But instead, the Buddha says, reduce up to that level and start the mantra, Netam mama neso amasi nameso atta. This is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. Up to that point, you have to meditate. Boil down up to that weakened point, and at that weak level, you disclaim whatever you hear, whatever you see, whatever you smell, whatever you taste, whatever you experience. And when and where you start with this disclaimer, it is rather you start with something not materialistic. Or sometimes with the mentality. Sometimes emotional, sometimes mind projections. So this, once you get confirmed, all these things are just passing clouds. They have no proper shapes. They can't stick into the sky. They are just passing. So let them happen. You just disclaim it. Don't make stories. Don't fabricate. Don't make as a raw material to build up something. When you are disclaiming, slowly you understand that if this mentality is without any self, without any soul, without any claiming, exactly the same way you can understand the materiality that based, given the foundation for mentality, also the same. So therefore, your understanding of nama rupa, starting with nama and then the rupa, that start when the rupa becomes so subtle. It has to come, it has to boil down to the very subtle state, and then only you start to apply this mantra, not me, not mine, not myself. So when that happens, ultimately, anything can happen. Good or bad, auspicious, unauspicious, expected and unexpected, everything happens. The moment you start the art of non-reaction, the moment you learn the art of unassuming kind of attention, unassuming but very vigilant, non-reactional but very diligent, not losing anything. You are completely observant. So that time, easily you can see, even though you see, you behave like a blind. Even though you hear, you behave like a deaf. Even you can express it, you never going to make any stories, no fabrication, you never talk to someone. So therefore you behave like a deaf. And you can comprehend something I had to make, karma and karma sanya, rupa and rupa sanya, but you never try to analyze it. If you are going to analyze, you get hooked up, you get committed, you get engaged. So you are not going to analyze, you behave like an idiot. I don't know. Let everything happen. Don't try to wait and analyze it. Waiting and analyzing means appreciation. So there, the interviews become like very thorny, hitting like. But where the story going to tell, the other party will say, no use, throw away, don't worry. And when that happened, it says that the person listening is maybe envious about my experience, that is, he don't know about that, that is why he is denying. All the kind of stories can happen. So therefore, that state is very mystic kind of thing. But anyway, still the mindfulness can advance through, and ultimately what happens is, not that things are not available, but the thing is you are not worrying about it. Main thing is not to worry. And then it appears like as if there is nothing. That is the nothingness, what we call relative nothingness. Not that things are not available, who cares? Galala. In Sinhala we call galala. But I don't know how to put it to English. Who cares? If you have reduced, you have boiled down to that cloud-like situation, why should you analyze it? More you analyze, you appreciate this dream, this concept. So therefore this nothingness is something relative. You don't say nothing. There are sounds are there, thoughts are there, pains are there, some fractions of the breath is there, and the shape of your body also in the mind is there. But you know, they are kind of drawings on the water body. If you put a mark on the water, immediately the mark is there, ultimately it disappears. So, that is the point the Buddha says, Patavi Dhatu, there are two kinds, the phrase that I took as today's topic, Ajhata Patavi Dhatu, Bahidha Patavi Dhatu. Patavi Dhatu means hardness, softness. Heavy, light, and smooth and rough. So you have your own body and you can experience the hardness, softness, heaviness, lightness, smoothness and roughness. And when you come up to the boil down situation, you feel the object in front of you, it also carries the hardness, softness, smoothness, roughness, heaviness, lightness. And the Buddha says, this is dead one, and what you call this is me, this is mine, I am living, and not no difference. This dhatu by itself, they don't know that is existing in a living body or a male or female, or it is living in a, or it is existing in a dead one. So very thing, you give values, you give labels, and you give likings and dislikings. So much so, whatever the amount you are going to give the values, these are the only thing creating suffering. This is the boundary. Whatever you are going to deal with, whatever you are going to analyze it, whatever you are going to label it, assume it, recognize it, react it, that is the only sphere creating suffering. That is something, what is creating suffering is pointed and defined by you, not the second person. So if you consider outside Patavi Dhatu and inside Patavi Dhatu the same, that does not indicate that no Patavi Dhatu. Patavi Dhatu is there, no worry. Ajjata Patavi Dhatu, Bahidha Patavi Dhatu, Patavi Dhatu, Revesa. This is the external Patavi Dhatu, partners. The internal Patavi Dhatu, both are Patavi Dhatu. Why should I take a special care about so-called my Patavidhara? So Patavidhara don't care whether you claim it or not. So that is the point. Our culture, our conventional values, according, this is my body, this is not my body. So let it be there, but consider them as nothing. This is for the sake of convention, convene. We say, this is me, this is not me. But in absolute, you have to understand Patavi means Patavi. So whenever you try to see Patavi Dhatu, in this sense, that means this is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. It's external thing, maybe my most lovable gadget. But that is also Patavi Dhatu. My body, Patavi Dhatu, is not me, not mine, not myself. This is the way the Buddha says, see things as they are. Whenever such a viewpoint to see things as they are, no, there is no special desire for that particular thing or special hatred to the other particular thing. So you develop kind of a relinquishment, a special attachment, but its utility value is there. You can use it as a utility value, but no special preferences, because it is Patavi Dhatu, the Buddha explained, from the time of beginning of the civilization, the many potters made so much of clay pots, that everything ended up with breaking. Daily they are making, and equally everything is breaking, so what, nothing to worry, because clay goes to clay. That's it. When it is the shape, we call it jug. We call a pot. But the clay do not know that if I am in a jug or I am in a pot, starting as a clay and end up with a clay. So there is nothing to worry. That worry is the only thing you are losing, but you can use the very thing on the utility value. So that is the way you are using your body. You are using your relatives. You are using a dear and near one and property. That does not indicate that you are devaluating or undermining or look down. You ask them to prove its own capacity, its own utility value, verily appreciating it, no additional aesthetic value, no any added value. So therefore the Buddha says in the Kalakarama Sutta, Ditta Datta Banna Manjati, Datta Ranna Manjati, Datta Adittham Manjati, Datta Banna Manjati. Whatever you see, don't think there is some other additional thing I have to see. That's all you have to see, that's all. What you see is this, what you see. And don't think it is nothing not to see. No, no, that is also not there. There is no special way of looking at it. That is it. Don't think the Buddha is looking at it in a different way. Exactly the same. The Buddha never recognizes it. He never assumed this as me or mine, but he knows the utility value. That is how your body or internal earth element or internal air element, fire element. All the elements you are recognizing just to understand their utility value, but never add anything, never subtract anything. So therefore, whether it is existing beyond your body or within the body, it is in close or far away, whether it is liking or disliking, everything happens when you are going to give assumed values or added values, when you are going to give labels, when you are going to give recognition, assumption, that's the cause of suffering. So that nothingness, therefore something relative. So the Buddha says it is happening. You start with the sensuous pleasure, sensuous gratification. Ultimately you are dreaming about their perception. And once that is gone, you have to hold on a reference point known as materiality. And when you observe the materiality, it is slowly dwindling. Let it happen. And it end up with the perception of materiality, and that time you can see how everything is mind-made. Mano bubbangama dhamma, mano sitha mano vya, mano sache pasannena, bhasati va karoti va, tatonang dukkha manveti chakanga vato pada. So the Buddha very clearly at the beginning of the Dhammapada he says, everything is mind-made. Mano, and the mind is the forerunner. And mano bubbangama, Mano Pubbangamada, Mano Setta, mind is the important thing and the decisive factor, mind made. So don't apply that to the sense pleasure. That has specific aesthetic value. So if you are going to apply that in the normal day with the normal people, you don't know how to use the technique. You apply it when everything reduces the rupa sanya. So therefore, daily you have to meditate. In the early few minutes, you are boiling down to the bare minimum. At that level only you are applying, it is not me, it is not my life, myself, my soul. So therefore, this technique has an appropriate time value to apply it, and then ultimately deductive knowledge will come back, working backward, to the other aspects, the gross aspect. They also appear in the same fate. They also have some value that nothing to get attracted to, but you can make use it in the utility value. That's the way you have to use even this very Dhamma. Don't try to give additional value for the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. They have utility value. When the utility is finished, even the Dhamma has to get rid of. Dhamma is shedding off. So therefore, Buddha says, Dhammo piho vipre paha tappa pageva dhamma. Mani, this so-called Dhamma, you have to do away with. What about the Adhamma? What about the kilesas or definements? So even the Dhamma you have to give up. So therefore consider them in the utility value. So this is applicable to the Patavi Dhatu, Apo Dhatu, Tejo Dhatu, Vayo Dhatu. So when we are treating this, the positive side of the materiality, when you go to the, after the fourth jhana, when you go to the Akasananchayatan, that the space is limitless, easily you can understand the space, there's nothing to fight. There's nothing to claim. And it is more applicable than the materiality. And when you come back to the Vijnana, that the creating the positive and negative, good and the bad, and all the kind of thing, all applicable to Manupubbangama Dhamma, Manosetta Manomaya, mind as the forerunner, then you are going more and more towards the detached utility value rather than aesthetic values and other kind of thing. More and more you go for this utility value, less and less tension, less and less frustration, and you find that we can associate with any matter or any person without the preconceived ideas, so we can be a human being rather than a sectarianism and selection, this and that. That is the way you have to understand this capacity. This potential is available for each and every being. Buddha appreciate this potential than your achievement. Even though whether you achieved or not, this potential is the most precious thing. So Buddha says, getting a human life, this potential you have done with your past good deeds. So therefore, after you get it, you will never get the perfect one. So therefore, don't worry about these minuous things, little things, to use it to sectarianism, use it to fundamentalism, separate people, and ultimately that going to give so much of tension and the fear, uncertainty, frustration, neurosis, and that is the one going to accumulate. So you are doing away with it in the little small scale, ultimately the deductive knowledge, the inferential knowledge doing the rest for you. It calculates it and say, if this is so, that is also the case. So therefore, most important thing is not the deep layers of the meditation. At the beginning, see material as material. The training yourself to see things as they are, in the material as I, in the gross form. See, and that very training definitely leading you to very subtle layers, very subtle episodes, which is none of your business. That's already in the package. So you have to start and give the momentum. Once the momentum given, karma, karma sanya, rupa and rupa sanya, this is the work, it's going to disentangle the entanglement. So everyone gets entangled in the different multifaceted ways, but disentanglement has kind of a universal formula. That is how the Buddha can come out with the four foundation of mindfulness and common object for meditation. And because disentanglement has some common characteristics. So this whole sutta is going to remind you, even though you are discreet and discriminate about the individuals, your attention must be to see the common characters of the human. More and more you understand the peace, the brotherhood, everything going to come. And you feel like yet another human being. You see that when you see a sand bed, one grain of sand never boasting up telling I am different than the fellow sand bed, sand grain. Appaka, Valuka, Ganga, Ananta, Nibbuta, Jida. So your best is to just be yet another grain of sand. That is what you become around. So I hope today's talk will help increase your enthusiasm towards understanding and see things as they are. With that remark, I would like to thank you for listening. Thank you very much.